Do a great job. Thank you. Man. 4th of July, man, coming up. You guys got plans? How's breakfast, Jigger? Is that good? Good. Just make sure. Get it. That's great. That's good. Most important meal of the day. Wouldn't want you to miss it. Hey, by the way, I'm joking with Jigger because we're friends. We can do that, man. That's the kind of church we are. It's all in good fun. But please feel free to bring coffee, pastry, stuff in here. I mean, look at the floor. It's okay. You know, it's easy to clean up. It's not an issue. Besides caffeine and sugar, nobody sleeps, right? So that's important. The 4th of July is just right around the corner, and I would just like, please don't forget our veterans, okay? Please, and their families. So I just want to throw that out there in the celebrations.
What
a lot to be thankful for. God, so many of you guys have been evacuating and all that stuff. So, and what an answer to prayer. But please remember those that I gave all. Okay, so. Hey, we're going to jump into this text. We're going to take up right where we left off last time. Okay, we're in the Gospel of John. Okay, we're taking a brief break from Matthew. We'll pick that up when he comes back. But we're in John. We're going to start in John 18:12, right where we left off last time. Okay. By the way, did you guys hear, you know the guy, you know the song, The Hokey Pokey?
Yes.
You guys see, they all know that. That was a great song. The guy that wrote that song died. Did you know that? He just died yesterday. Yeah, he passed away. And apparently there was a big argument in the family. Al, they had a big argument, you know, should it be cremation, you know, or should it be a burial? It was a pretty serious argument. Eventually they came around, okay, they're going to do a burial, and, you know, they put his right foot in. Okay, so we'll jump right in. We're going. Last week, that was just for you, Nick. That was really bad, wasn't it? That was bad. Blame Rick. Where is Rick? He's somewhere in here. We're going to blame him. He told me that. Okay. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. You guys got allergies? I'm sorry. I'm kind of going off on tangent. Nobody have allergies, man? I got allergies.
Yes.
And I never got allergies until I turned like 60-something. All of a sudden, start getting allergies. And I take this allergy medication, and it makes your mouth so dry. It's just like, it's terrible. So if I get caught up in my words, I'll blame that. I don't know. But last week we saw where Jesus, and this is really amazing, came forward for us and literally took the cup of the wrath of God for us in our place. And we saw last week in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus wasn't trying to change his circumstances. He didn't try to change anything. And it was still possible. I mean, it was the 11th hour, but he could have still aborted his mission and left us all to perish, really. Left Peter flailing with his little sword and all the others. But he didn't. He didn't. He didn't even consider it an option. And as horrible as the cup was, he knew that his immediate desire, his loudest desire, to save himself, must bow or submit to his deepest desires to save us. And aren't you glad he did that? We saw that because Jesus did that, because Jesus subordinated his loudest desires to his deepest desires, you and I can face our circumstances. We can press through or trust through our suffering. And we can persevere unto the other side, where our circumstances and our deepest desires will literally converge in Jesus. Let's jump into the text. John 18:12, that's where we're going to start. Then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. They bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Okay, this is a detail. It's another one of those little details that John gives in his gospel that the other gospel writers don't have, okay? So there's this guy, Annas, okay? He's a high priest, or was, or is, or who is he? Who is this guy, Annas? It's almost like if you read this gospel carefully, and we're going to see in a couple lines from now, that John's going to refer to him as the high priest. But he just said Caiaphas is the high priest. So are there two? Is there one? What's going on? Who is Annas? Okay, that's a difficult name to say. You could go off on that. But who is Annas? Well, okay, he's a high priest. He was a high priest from 6 AD to 15 AD. Okay? He was appointed by the Romans. When they actually made Judea a Roman province, boom, he's appointed the first high priest. 6 AD, 15 AD. And this guy is extremely wealthy. He's wealthy, wealthy, wealthy. He's powerful. Extremely powerful, extremely wealthy, and extremely, and I don't even know the right word here, wily, crafty, manipulative. Politician? I mean, he was just a survivor, okay? So crafty, so wily, so powerful, so wealthy that five of his sons will become high priests. Not to mention his son-in-law, Caiaphas, who currently in this text is the high priest. But John, the writer, he knows Annas is the real power behind all of this that's going on. He's the real power. He's the mover and shaker, okay? His son-in-law, Caiaphas, who's the current high priest, he's the high priest from like 18 AD to 36. 18 years he's high priest. And it's interesting because when Pilate is withdrawn or taken out as Caesar takes him away as governor, relieves him of his post, Caiaphas loses his position too. Interesting. Okay. So John's not confused. He's not ignorant. He's not saying they're two high priests. He knows exactly what's going on. And he knows the real power behind the scenes, and it's Annas. Caiaphas is the son-in-law. But there's something else too. Orthodox Jews still see Annas as the high priest. Because, why? The position is for life. And Rick, you know this, Gary, Numbers 35, 25, the high priest, that position's for life. So for most of the Jewish community, Annas was still the high priest. Romans could put them in office and take them out at their will, but in the Jewish mind, Annas is still the high priest. Verse 14, Caiaphas was the one who advised the Jewish leaders that it was good if one man died for the people. Okay, and you guys remember what that's referring to, verse 15. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus because this disciple was known to the high priest. He went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard, but Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple who was known to the high priest came back, spoke to the servant girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. Now, you've got to love Peter and John right here because, you know, there's a battle raging in them. I mean, they're terrified. They're terrified. But they're still following Jesus. Their knees are shaking, but they're still following Jesus, right? Right into the courtyard of the high priest. There's a battle raging. Their loudest desires, you know, run for us, run! You know, stay away, self-preservation. But their deepest desires are to follow Jesus. I mean, you got to admire them. And that's what they do here. Okay, they follow Jesus. Now listen to the young girl who's at the gate. She's monitoring the gate, the door here. This is great. Verse 17. "You aren't one of the man's disciples too, are you?" she asked Peter. He replied, "I am not." Uh-oh. Okay. It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire that they had made to keep warm. Peter was also standing with them, warming himself. Okay, so there's Peter. They have a fire, trying to stay warm. There's Peter. He's standing by the fire. You know, he's trying to blend in. Okay? He's trying not to stand out. So he's at the fire. He's warming himself. You know, if he wasn't at the fire, he would, you know, stand out. He doesn't want to do that. He's terrified. He wants to blend in. Nobody notice him. He'll stand at the, "Hey, how's it going? Oh, great day." He's there. He's trying to blend in. He's trying to disappear. Right. Be nonchalant. Okay. Watch what happens. Verse 19, switch of scenes. Meanwhile, back in the courtyard, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him in the face. "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. "If I said something wrong," Jesus replied, "testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Verse 25. Meanwhile, back at the campfire, Simon Peter was standing there, warming himself. So they asked him, "You aren't one of the disciples too, are you?" He denied it, said, "I am not." One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, it can't get any better than this, challenged him. "Didn't I see you in the garden? This is Malchus's cousin. What is he doing there?" I mean, think what's going through Peter's mind. I mean, I can't even imagine the look on his face. "Didn't I see you with him in the garden?" Peter again denied it. And at that moment, the rooster crowed. And every one of us here have been right there. Every one of you, me, we've all been right here. The temptation was so intense. You couldn't think straight. It was so heavy. You turned on the people that you loved. You said things and you did things. Not only were they hurtful, you undermined the people you love and the values that you hold most dear. Because you and I, we confused our loudest desires with our deepest desires. We confused our loudest desires to be safe with our deepest desires to be with Jesus. And we all wept bitter tears. Some of you are weeping them still. You're haunted. Verse 28. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning. And to avoid ceremonial uncleanliness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them. Now, is this ironic? Or is this, maybe it's just me. They're plotting to kill a man who's innocent, but they don't want to be unclean. They're plotting to kill an innocent man, but they don't want to be unclean. and Pilate. Pilate is the governor. He is Caesar in Judea. And he has to go out and see them. They won't come in to see him. He has to go out there to see him. It's interesting. And Pilate went out and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves, judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone." That's funny. I guess we don't want a justice, we just want an execution. This is interesting. Maybe that's just me. They objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus. It's okay if he's defiled. That's okay. You know, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you king of the Jews? Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked him. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate asked. "Your own people, chief priests, handed you over to me. What is it that you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You're a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. And everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What's truth?" retorted Pilate. See, I really don't think that Pilate sees any connection between the truth and the really dangerous position he's up to his neck in right now in trying to make a decision alone. Okay. I think truth right now for Pilate, that's like a philosophical luxury, okay? I don't have time for it right now. I got a potential riot on my hands, okay? Truth? Who's got time for truth? Okay. So Pilate, and this is great. I'm attracted to Pilate. He's so much like us. Like maybe I see myself in him, that's why. But watch what he does here, because you're going to see yourself. This is funny. So Pilate, well, I'll just say it. He changes the subject. Isn't that what we do? I love it. He changes the subject. And from this moment on, Pilate really knows that this whole thing's a sham. They've got no case against Jesus. They're just here because they hate him. They want him dead. It's a sham. The whole thing's a sham. And right now, from here on, he knows it. He knows it. Okay? But I think what's also clear is Pilate is only able to decide to make a decision on the basis of his loudest desires. Expediency. Power. On the basis of where that power is. And not upon his deepest desires. Truth. Justice. And you see, when the moment of decision confronts him, it's obvious, right? Isn't it true? And, I mean, for justice, you got to take time. You got to weigh the facts. You got to slow things down and think. Weigh things before you deliver. Justice, it's going to take time. Time. Time to weigh, time to think. But to take time, going to require somebody with incredible inner strength. You got a whole crowd right waiting to riot right now. Pilate doesn't have that kind of courage. He doesn't have it. So at the greatest crossroads moment of his life, he's going to make a decision based on his loudest desires. Expediency, power, what's in it for me? This dialogue that's going on right now that we're wrestling with between Jesus and Pilate, I think it throws it right out into the open for all us to see that there's a great tension. A great tension. And it's present at all moments, every moment, when there's an important moral decision to be made. And the tension is between power and truth. It's a tension, and it's powerful. It's a tension between power and truth. And of the two, power holds all the cards, really. Immediate gratification. Wow. And it just takes seconds to choose it. And everything falls the way you want it to. You're off the hook, everybody's off the hook, and everyone's happy. So at a decisive moment, he makes a decision that only takes seconds, but the consequences will last throughout time. Pilate must choose. And he must choose between justice and power. And Pilate, he's not a strong guy. The crowd is screaming. The crowds, they've got power. They don't give him time to think. And Pilate's even deceived by his own power as governor, that he can just, hey, we don't need to worry about truth. So you got to choose justice, power. Justice is costly. It'll cost him. Power, on the other hand, swift, immediate, profitable, at least for a little while. And I think this is just my opinion now. I'm just thinking it's at this point in this event that Pilate learns something. And we see it in Luke's gospel. Pilate learns that Jesus is from Galilee. Well, that's great. Galilee, Herod is head of Galilee. Send him off. He sends him off to Herod. Now, I mean, think of Pilate. He is so shrewd. You know, judge him yourself. No, we can't kill him if we judge him ourselves. Now he tries to send him off to Herod. And Herod, you know Herod, right? He killed John the Baptist. Now, Herod wants to see Jesus, but he's been burned once already. I killed one lunatic prophet, and look what happened, okay? So he mocks Jesus and sends him right back. Herod doesn't fall for it. But can you imagine how Pilate must have felt? Herod, great! Done. Woo! 1 hour later, here he comes. You know, it's like a bad penny. He keeps coming back. Herod's not going to get burned again. And Pilate still has to make a decision. Watch how he navigates this. This is amazing. You'll see yourself here. Verse 38. With this, he went out again to the Jews. Jesus is back, right? Gathered there and said, and this is great, I find no basis for a charge against him. This is like the third time Pilate's done this. First he says, judge him yourself. Oh, we can't do that because we can't kill him. Then he tries to send him to Herod, right? Now he just comes out and says it. I find no basis for a charge against him. Pilate finds no crime. Herod found no crime. But, verse 39, it's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews? They shouted back. No, not him. Give us Barabbas. Now, Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. Matthew said he was a murderer. See, the crowd's persistent. Now watch this. You got to love Pilate here. Watch how he tries to navigate this. He's going to do another tactic, and this is great. Okay. Then Pilate took Jesus, verse 19, had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they slapped him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." I think Pilate was hoping that they'll have pity on him. You know? The guy's beaten to an inch of his life, bloodied, mocked, humiliated. They'll have pity. Their lust for blood is done. As soon as the chief priests and the officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify!" The whole thing backfires. That's the whole thing about the bloodlust, you know? You think you'd be satisfied with a little bit of blood, but that's never enough. Never enough. "Crucify him." Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me," here we go again, "I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power to either free you or crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free again. Do you see this war raging inside Pilate? Truth, justice, power. He's trying to free Jesus. "Judge him yourself. I'll send him to Herod. You know, I don't find any guilt in him. I'll beat him to have mercy on him. You know, you'll pity him." Nothing works. And Pilate is just, he's miserable. A war is raging inside him. Justice. Power. Pilate's deepest desire: justice, truth. Pilate's loudest desire: power, self-preservation. Wow. But the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar's. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar's." What has just happened? What's happened? The charge against Jesus, right? Jesus is the bad guy. Now who's being charged? Pilate. Who's on trial? Jesus or Pilate? They're charging Pilate. And with the worst failure of all, you're not a friend of Caesar's. Maybe that's stunning. How did things change so quickly? Do you think Pilate, when he woke up that morning, thought this was going to happen? See, Annas, Caiaphas, the Sadducees, they know Pilate better than he knows himself. It's interesting. "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar's. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." They don't accuse Pilate anymore. I mean, Jesus. They're accusing Pilate. They're accusing him of not being a friend of Caesar's. The worst failure you could have if you're a Roman governor. And that kind of charge, you know, that's effective on people who are real insecure. Real insecure about their relationship, their connection with power or the person in power. Verse 13. When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. Since the time of Pilate, actually, since before Pilate, you know what men and women have learned down through the centuries? If you're going to defend an accused person, if you're going to stand up for justice, you will end up being accused. Ultimately. You see it in politics all the time. And Pilate's learning it here. The result is, it's a shift of attack. They begin to attack you, the person who dares to defend this individual. And at that moment, when the attack shifts, Dennis, when it goes from attacking the accused to attacking you for defending him, unless you have a source of security, a source of knowing who you are, a profound grounding in your life, bigger than the present power, you won't survive. You'll flip, just like Pilate. You'll flip. You are not a friend of Caesar's. Verse 14. It was the day of preparation. The day of preparation of the Passover. It was about noon. "Here's your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away! Take him away! Crucify him!" "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. He's mocking them because he knows he's lost already. His last little dig, he mocks them. "Shall I crucify your king?" Watch this. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. So Pilate gets a little victory, meager victory. The chief priest said, "We have no king but Caesar." I guess that wasn't blasphemous, right? You got to wonder, I do. At that moment, Pilate sitting on the judgment seat, I mean, hey, I wonder if he looked right at Annas, Caiaphas, all these high priests, and just shook his head. You guys are willing to sacrifice everything you hold dear, all your values, to destroy one man. Wow. Kind of reminds you of the press corps, doesn't it? You'll destroy all your values. Give it all up just to destroy an individual. That's a lot of hate. And Pilate, he's no match for these people. You know why he's no match? Anybody. Why is Pilate no match for these accusers? No confidence. They have no standard. Those are all good answers. I think he's no match because they know his idol. They know his small god. They know his loudest desire, acceptance by Caesar. They know him. They know his loudest desire. Acceptance by Caesar. His loudest desire, the one he uses to answer every question and every problem. Now, granted, there was a brief moment, a kind of a brief, clarifying little moment when he stood for justice, right? I find no basis for a charge. But he quickly got over that when he learned that, hey, if you're a friend of Jesus, you're not a friend of Caesar's. So that quickly convinced him that give up that one. Verse 16. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. The great tragedy, the great, great tragedy with Pilate. My heart goes out to Pilate here. Maybe because I'm a lot like him, and I'm imagining that we all are here. But the great tragedy is, really, his loudest desires were never fulfilled. Right? You know what happened to Pilate? Caesar removed him from his governorship. He was exiled, eventually ordered to commit suicide. He never became a friend of Caesar's. He never got his loudest desire. And he never got his deepest desire either. Truth or justice. He got neither. Matter of fact, I mean, the most famous line or reference that we have for Pontius Pilate, and you all know it, suffered under Pontius Pilate. Apostles' Creed. In the end, trying so hard to hold on to his deepest desires, he got nothing. He got neither his deepest desires nor his loudest desires. And worship team, you guys can come up. But let me ask you, I want to ask you a question, and I'll stop rambling. But today, who are you following? Are you following your loudest desires? Are you following your deepest desires? Which ones are you following? Your loudest? I don't know what that loudest desire for you is. Lust? Power? It's all boils down to power. Greed? Or your deepest desires? This is just truth, okay? You follow your loudest desires, just like Pilate, you will get neither your loudest desires or your deepest desires. You will get neither. Nothing. Jesus subordinated his loudest desires. He didn't want to go to the cross. Remember how he prayed? Drops of blood. Lord, if there's any other way, Father, any other way. He subordinated his loudest desires for his deepest desires to save you, to save me. And because he did that, you and I, we could subordinate, we could bow our loudest desires to our deepest desires. We can face our circumstances. We can trust into our suffering. Because at some point, eventually, our circumstances and our deepest desires, they converge in Jesus. And you know peace, you know wholeness, you know love. All the things, your deepest desires are fulfilled. Amen.